It has been the one song of those who thirst after absolute power, that the interest of the state requires that its affairs should be conducted in secret. But the more such arguments disguise themselves under the mask of public welfare, the more oppressive is the slavery to which they will lead. Better that right counsels be known to enemies than that the evil secrets of tyrants should be concealed from the citizens. They who can treat secretly of the affairs of a nation have it absolutely under their authority, and as they plot against the enemy in time of war, so do they against the citizens in time of peace.
One, two.
Who's going to have the guts to stand up on a stage and say that reptiles run the world? I mean, who's going to do it? No one's ever going to do it. We're never going to find out, are we?
Drop!
Intergalactic planets are free! Now, research has told me that you used to throw beer and pretzel parties for yourself when you were number three. Now that you're number one, is it champagne and caviar?
Actually, we try to go beyond that. We've got there's some high-grade dope that we've imported from Colombia, and we let everybody score. Let me just put it out there on the table and take whatever they want.
We want information. Information. Information.
Who are you?
The new number two.
Who is number one?
You are number six.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome to the September 16th edition of From the Bunker here on Revere Radio Network. I'm your host, Dire Wolf, and tonight with we have a very special guest. We have Freeman from the Freeman Perspective. He's a world-renowned filmmaker and definitely has some interesting perspectives on how this world works. I've had him on as a guest once before, and glad to have him on again, and tonight we're going to be talking about the Pharmacratic Inquisition, urban shamanism, and a plethora of things, I'm sure. How's it going tonight, Freeman?
It's going great.
Right on, brother. You know, like I was saying just at the beginning, you know, here on topics, I kind of want to start, well, best place to start, and that's with the beginning of things. You and I have both talked to Michael Tesserian quite a bit. I'm sure you have read Sitchin. You know, and you know all this, you know, all these ancient mythologies, and especially when it comes to the Phoenicians, you know, they all tell us, you know how this fruit opens your eyes and lets you know the difference between good and evil. And of course they're speaking of the Amanita muscaria. And you know, would you think that that would be pretty simple, you know, to understand good and evil? But, you know, if you do look at the work of Sitchin and Tesserian and all these other scholars of alternative history, you know, they speak about the, like, the Anunnaki and these other beings that were on this planet and, you know, genetically manipulated us. Well, now in the Phoenician Sanskrits, they talk about, you know, how they made us this slave race to collect the gold. Well, even back then, you know, you didn't collect gold. They didn't call it that. You mined it, just like now. But, you know, however, they did collect mushrooms, just like as we do now, and the Amanita, it happens to turn gold when it's dried. You know, could this possibly also be the forbidden fruit of Adam and Eve? You know, I'm sure these gods or, you know, the Anunnaki, they, you know, they wouldn't like their slaves knowing the truth now, would they? I mean, it's a...
Well, I hate to throw everything towards the Amanita. Listening to James Arthur the other day, and you know, for him everything was the Amanita, from Jesus to the tree of life, the Caduceus. You know, because definitely we have aspects of this story that prove that we're mining this planet for the gods, or the Nephilim, Anunnaki, whichever you want to name them. Like the story of Cortez when he shows up on the beaches of the Incans, and they were like, oh, here are our gods, because they were expected.
Yeah, they came to collect.
Bearded white men to show up. And so then they said, oh, well, our gods are here. Here's all the gold we've been mining. But of course, as you said, the mining is, well, the Incans at that time when Cortez showed up no longer knew how to mine. That was ancient technology. So how backwards is that? And you know, then they gave Cortez all the gold until they figured out that he wasn't actually Quetzalcoatl, and then they brought it all down to the tunnels. So we have a lot of ancient astronaut knowledge. I mean, there is just too much documented evidence to give up on the idea of visitors in our ancient past. Or, well, then the Amanita itself definitely is molded into our reality big time, and no one realizes it. One of my favorite examples is Santa Claus. Has anyone gotten into Santa Claus with you and the Amanita?
Oh, very much so. In fact, I, you know, planned on bringing that up after, you know, getting into some of the symbolism, but yeah, we can bring it up now.
Okay, well, no, let's jump back, because I kind of got sidetracked on thinking, because I was thinking about that earlier with the Amanita and the use of psychic shamanism, because Aleister Crowley, he said, my observation they are not necessarily based on the cerebral and nervous structures that we know, and that the one and only chance for mankind to advance as a whole is for individuals to make contact with such beings. Now, this is the part that intrigues me, because all through human history, we have contact with these advanced beings. And for me, when I'm looking at this picture, I see that magic is the methodology in order to tap into this pan-dimensional realm and bring back information from these beings. But now, our DMT receptors in the Amanita muscaria absolutely also bring us into contact with these other beings. And definitely, hallucinogenics and magic have run hand-in-hand from the very beginning.
Well, yeah, and you know, you being an urban shaman, which I believe actually are the most powerful shamans known in history because of the variety of plants are available to you. You know, back in ancient times, the shaman only had the plants that were available in their area. Sure you've experienced psilocybin. I have never got to experience the Amanita muscaria. I have a really good friend that's a mycologist, and he's offered to play with me a couple times with it and take me somewhere, and I just haven't really had the right mind frame to play that yet, or to go there, but you know, I've always figured when I smoked salvia, or chewed salvia, or ate the mushroom, the psilocybin, that I am in contact with another dimension, and which could be, you know, other beings obviously live in other dimensions, and it's like salvia is a powerful one to see into another dimension as far as that goes. And, you know, what are your thoughts as far as, you know, traveling with them?
Well, I was reading Chance McKenna, and I decided, hey, let's megadose.
Yeah.
And me and a friend who I'm not sure he had ever tried mushrooms before.
And you gave him like a heroic dose, like a quarter ounce or something?
Yeah, somewhere around 3.5 grams.
Oh, that's a good dose, though.
Yeah.
That's enough to talk to God.
It's definitely good enough.
But that's what I've always referred to.
He kind of wigged out. But the interesting point was that we were sitting there, and, you know, it's said that you can experience the realm if you're both in the same state of mind. So two people in the room can experience the same realm. When he starts describing, he starts laughing, right, uncontrollably, and he's like, do you see him? Do you see him? And I'm looking, and we're both looking in our mind's eye, and I see this swirling pattern of colored light, and out of it comes this little character that is on a tricycle, all made of light, all you know how hard it is to describe what you see, but this guy comes out of the light and comes wheeling towards me, and I can see his little grin on his face, and he has a pyramid over his head.
Oh, wow.
And my friend is describing him to me at the same time that I'm looking at him. And we're both seeing this little elven character with a pyramid on its head.
Nice.
Now, this has come up in Terrence McKenna's book, and this was before I ever read the part. And it came up in a friend of mine who had tried ayahuasca. And now I look at that picture with Aleister Crowley with the pyramid on his head and his hands held up by his face, and I think, oh my God, he's depicting that little guy. So there's this whole realm that can be experienced and not described. I mean, how could you ever tell anyone that hadn't tried it what it is?
Well, it's like James Arthur, like as you mentioned earlier, which is a, you know, also a very great author, and has a couple videos out there I suggest people go pick up. If you want to keep up on what we're talking about and really get into what we're talking about, because he goes into great detail, very great detail. But he sits there and will go off, basically, and he'll talk about it being as bliss, and, you know, you can't describe bliss because bliss is different for every individual. You know, it's just like Bill Hicks, he would, you know, basically explain the same thing. We're all different individuals, but we're all the same. We're all of the same consistency, and we're all the same consciousness. But, you know, I sit there and look at this, and it's so true in every way. But I have not seen the little elven character with the pyramid yet, and I have played with the mushroom for many, many years now, but I'll keep my eye out for
my head. It was the craziest thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, the worst thing I think that's ever happened to me on mushrooms, I was at a show here in Portland, and it was at the Crystal Ballroom, and I was with some friends of mine, and one of my friends, I just turned him on to David Icke, and which was in a good way good for him, and another way bad for him, because he's really all about the lizards now. And so it's like, man, of all things, you know, it's like, okay, you just kind of put that in the back of your head. Don't really go off on it. And because you'll do it in public, too. But we were both pretty, you know, heavily dosed. It was an eighth each that we ate, so 3.5 grams and, you know, enough to take us where we needed to go. And he was sitting there going at the table, sitting there talking to me and telling me, do you hear him? Do you hear him? And I'm like, do I hear what? And he's like, the lizards, man. They're all speaking in lizard. And I'm just laughing because, you know, I'm uncontrollably laughing now because it's like all the background noise and all the crowd talking. And that's, you know, you can't understand every conversation when you got 500 of them going on. But I had another friend that was behind us at, you know, we were sitting at a table and there's these curtains set up to where you can go out this big bay window, but you can't, like, see through the curtain, so they got them all closed up, but people can go up behind the curtains. And a friend of mine, Steve, was back there, and he was at this little crack, and he was talking to me through the whole show, so for like 2 hours, and I'm sitting there tripping to no end, and I thought I'd lost it, because I got Bob here and lizards, and I got somebody talking to me that I don't know who the hell it is or see them, and it took me 3 days to figure out what happened, but I didn't realize my friend was behind the curtain. But it definitely can get pretty bad. But to get back into subject, you know, I'm sure you're familiar with like the Rig Veda, and you know, one of the oldest scriptures. It, you know, contains over like 1,000 poems, you know, extolling the merit and virtues of King Soma, who is portrayed as a lightning born mountain residing deity and a urine-tinged elixir of health and strength, as well as being praised as, you know, direct means of communion with the divine and as the basically supreme poetic and musical inspiration. But if you've ever read any of R. Gordon Wasson's work, Soma, the Divine Mushroom of Immortality, was written like in 69, he identifies Soma as a mixture of Amanita muscaria and which we're going to get into here in a little bit on the Christmas thing in Santa Claus. You know, it grows underneath conifer trees, so which is your Christmas tree. You know, this having this red cap spotted, you know, with white thorn-like crust and a resinous flowers of cannabis sativas. And, of course, as we know of as herb or marijuana or pot. Now, the psychoactive element of Amanita muscaria is a muscimol, and now this remains active in urine for like up to 7 re-ingestions. Now in the Bible, and I'm sure you've heard James Arthur speak of this too. That's the first I heard of it is when he spoke of it here a few years ago. I saw him in Bend, Oregon, and it was a great time actually. But he said there's a story in the Bible where Jesus goes to the fountain, and like this girl comes up to him and says, you know, would you like some water? And he sits there and says, if you know who I was, you know, you would ask me for the water. You know, you wouldn't ask, you know, you wouldn't sit there be offering me water. You know, what's your take on this? You know, wouldn't he possibly, you know, there's one of two things I figured he could mean on it, you know, either, you know, well, I got the best bottled water, you know, and it's like this Avion crap, or, you know, what he's really saying is, I'll give you the living water. Okay, now this living water is that either, you know, he's either making her this cup of, you know, water, or he produces it, which is like one of the things I just talked about, you know, like, you know, alchemists, they know all about this, and he produces it through his urine, you know, the waters of life, and, you know, lets her see the light.
I mean, so much of religion is based on the ingestion of mushrooms, and absolutely in South American tribes, anyone partaking in the mushroom was not allowed to pee on the ground, and the other partitioners would drink of their pee.
Yeah, why waste it?
So this is not at all not unheard of. I mean, it's a common practice.
Yeah, I don't remember where I read this, and it was a, you know, it wasn't like a BS article. It wasn't the Inquirer or anything. It was quite a few years ago I was reading this deal on where they would filter the urine of schizophrenics and drink it. And this was going on in the Soviet Union and apparently just tripping balls over it. So I don't know. I can't remember where I read that at. It was years ago. I'm sure I was like at work and sitting there bored and surfing and reading whatever came about. But, you know, it's just a... crazy, but that Wasson also, he notes in ancient Hindu scriptures depicting urine drinking as bestowing, you know, spirituality, just as Siberian shamans drank the urine of, you know, the Amanita muscaria, you know, and they fed reindeer, you know, which we're going to get into here in the Christmas stuff, which is, you know, crazy because, you know, they fed reindeer, which exhibit these, you know, these signs of mushroom intoxication in order to gain insight and wisdom, you know, and...
The test done with the monkeys where they'll go for the DMT every time over even food and water. There's something in the soul that craves this.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it's like James Arthur says, you know, we're born like this. And, you know, Tessarian also said this. He enlightened me like on the, you know, on the lights and what have you that take, you know, that take all kinds of yummies away from you. The fluorescence when they blast them into you as you're born and beat you. You know, all the fun shock things. But, you know, he says, James Arthur this is, you know, that we're born with just so, and we're so high when we're born. I mean, we're just like in this psychedelic realm. We're born into a psychedelic realm, and apparently when you die, you go back into a psychedelic realm because apparently the DMT pumps back, you know, starts going in hard and heavy because we do produce DMT. And it's, you know, we produce some very powerful drugs in our body, and it's just a matter of getting to them and finding them. I found this group that was really crazy. I don't know if you've heard of them. They were Aton Omega or something like that. And James Arthur is how I got turned on to him. I heard him speak of them, but I just found it funny they even had the name Aton after getting done talking with Michael so many times. Have you heard of that group at all?
No.
Well, they had like this little escape place in somewhere in Europe, like Austria or something, and they built these cabins that are all made in a certain way and have certain angles and proportions for certain energy values, and the requirements is right when you get there they fast you for 21 days. I'm like, well, that's just a total brainwash camp. I mean, the first time you go there you're getting fasted for 21 days. I mean, I do like a 6 or 8 day fast and I'll be tripping balls by day 4. So
yeah,
I don't know.
I've never tried fasting.
Yeah, it's good for you, actually. You should do it once or twice a year. It's definitely healthy. And like I said, by day 4, you'll be... Yeah, after day 3, you're not hungry anymore. The hunger stops. So, but boy, that first 3 days really sucks for the hunger. But definitely a good experience. Now, have you read any of John Allegro's work?
No.
Now, this cat, he was a... He used a lot of Wasson's theory and comparative linguistics, basically, to decipher the Gospels of Jesus and the Dead Sea Scrolls. And he was dismissed from the translation team for these documents after he published his findings, you know, in this book. It was called The Sacred Mushroom and the Cross. And, yeah, definitely crazy. And Clark Heinrich also, he published, you know, he furthered on the research on ethogens and organic substances, you know, basically which, you know, enhance our feelings of the divine, is how he put it. But definitely some interesting stuff between all those cats is what they wrote. But one of the things that I found between the both of them that were very similar when they were talking about the anointed one. Now, I know you're very familiar with Jordan Maxwell, as so as I, and probably most of my listeners. But he has a difference. He says the anointed one. I can't. What does he say his that means as far as that goes? Wasn't he saying it's just oil? Well,
it was based on the Nessa, the Egyptian crocodile.
Yeah, that's right. But they're sitting there saying it means literally one smeared with semen, is what they're saying. And this is where James Arthur comes up with his point on, you know, Jesus being the symbol of the mushroom. Because, you know, between these other two cats, they're sitting there saying Jesus is portrayed, you know, as the Son of God, you know, sent to fulfill the role of the Messiah or the Anointed One, you know, which in literally is what they're saying means one smeared with semen. But, and so if you look at the mushroom, and especially the Amanita, you know, it doesn't decimate seeds, or disseminate seeds, I mean, as plants do, but ejaculates these microscopic spores, which create a, you know, thread-like fungal network at the base of these Christmas trees, the conifer trees, which, you know, these...
That's the third part of this whole connection to the other side, because I had mentioned magic, and I mentioned the hallucinogens, or what we have started to call theogenics. And then there's the petite mort, the orgasm, which has always been another way of contacting with the divine. And, you know, all three of these in conjunction, and you got Aleister Crowley, right?
Yeah.
What came to mind when you were saying this was I went to Benjamin Franklin's lodge in Philadelphia, the big Mason temple there, and as I walked in, there's a hallway to Benjamin Franklin, and over it is a sun made of sperm, all made out of gold. So it's all these little sperms swimming to the central egg, and it's a sun sign made of gold. And then we got to the Arabic room. They have each of the rooms inside of this temple dedicated to different regions. So they have the Egyptian room, the Templar room, and the Arabic room. And all of the artwork on the walls were representations of mushrooms. And so I asked the guy giving us the tour, and he had been very forthcoming. It was a very enjoyable tour. I asked him about the mushroom artwork. And you guys into the Amanita? And he was like, oh, no, just looks that way. Yeah, right.
It looks that way in all kinds of artwork. You know, I saw this one piece. I believe it was on James Arthur's website, actually, is where I saw it at. I think it was, maybe. I don't know. I've been to way too many. But it was this ancient painting, you know, of course, the ones the Catholics love to burn up so much after so many hundreds of years. Oh, well, we used up that theory, let's go with another. Or there was too much truth held in that, gotta burn it. But there's this picture of Jesus, and underneath it, there's the blue mushroom, which is the psilocybin. Then there's the Amanita muscaria, which is the, you know, red capped with the white spots and a white
stem. How about this? When the mushroom pops and the cap opens, a thin layer of membrane folds down over the stem of the mushroom, giving that little ring on the chibenzis, or, you know, the little ring. If we're considering that religion's foundations actually lie within the mushroom, which I absolutely believe, then perhaps this is where circumcision comes from.
You know, I was thinking about that and also all the phallic symbols because of the phallic mushrooms that are also very hallucinogenic. It's like these ones called Amazonian penis envy, which are a type of psilocybin that I've eaten that are my favorite, actually. They're very powerful, so you only need a couple grams to go speak to God, is the way I put it. I mean, that's the way I've always put it since I've been eating the mushroom. It's like, wow, I get to go have conversations with God. This is cool. And, you know, ended up finding out I'm having conversations with myself. So what does that mean?
That's an interesting concept, you know.
Yeah, it's...
The ancients, when they talked to self, thought that they were talking to God.
Well, I think you are, personally. Yeah. I mean, that's what...
I like to look at the extraterrestrial aspect of this whole thing as well, because, you know, the spore of the mushroom is absolutely designed to travel through space.
Oh,
it loves space. That's its best inhabitant.
Oh, very much so.
Habitation.
Well, it's like James Arthur.
It can come in and I'm finding it so intriguing, all of the connections with Sirius. And I'd be begin to wonder if it's not a form of communication being sent to us. Because Robert Anton Wilson talks about being contacted by a Syrian, and then, of course, all the Syrian connections I've found with the corporate logos and just the symbolism of the architecture.
Yeah, that's massive as far as Syria goes, so
that is. And then myself, you know, even though I wasn't doing any mushrooms at the time, at 10 years old, drew an image that absolutely has to do with contact with the Syrians.
Yeah, I saw that on your video. I thought that was
25 years to try and decipher this image I drew when I was 10.
Yeah, that was absolutely amazing, your video is. So anyone want to grab Freeman's video, it's called The Freeman Perspective, and it's 3 hours of absolutely awesome information. It's something you can watch with your family members. There's nothing violent or foul. There's no bad language. It's very well done.
Wait, I got to amend that.
Okay.
Now, if I were speaking about mushrooms, I wasn't sure if I was going to admit this or not, but I think I will. Columbia was a bit of my own ritual against the powers that be, the New World Order, or whatever you want to term them.
Yeah.
Personally, I'm not about fighting the New World Order, because it's the same old order, and it's all in our head. But changing our minds, that's I'm definitely into. But the Columbia episode, I mean, besides turning the Madonna into an alien, the Pope into a fish monster, and having a priest bashed his head bashed in with a sledgehammer, plus showing a throat slicing ritual, does also have foul language and nudity. But the interesting the point that I was going to make about the Columbia episode was a friend of mine happened to give me a few mushrooms on that day that I was airing Columbia.
Nice.
So when I aired Columbia, which was May 1st, at the stroke of midnight, I aired Columbia while giggling a lot. Fortunately, I had prepared the tape, okay? But I do it all live, so I had to go in and put the tape in myself. And so here I am giggling as I'm doing my Illuminati anti-ritual on May 1st at the stroke of midnight on psilocybin. And the initial song that comes on during the Columbia episode is the Mozart's Freemason Funeral March. That was my little ritual to the Illuminati.
There you go. That's a great deal. And you know, I can't agree with you more on, you know,
I am reworking the Columbia. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I am reworking the Columbia to include all of the Columbia Space Shuttle video footage of the craft that I drew in my picture when I was 10.
Oh, nice.
Have you seen that one?
Yes, I have, actually. I have. I mentioned that just a little bit ago. That's the first I saw of that, and it was like, wow, that is crazy, because when I saw those pictures of all those spaceships, all these space shuttles, they all got this Sirius symbol on there, and I'm like, whoa, that is crazy.
And then also the craft.
Yeah.
And the hyperdimensional physics. So this is where I start to come and wonder about this contact with the others and the contact with, cause, you know, I didn't know any of this stuff at 10. This was pre-Star Wars. This was, you know, pre-everything. And I've got all this stuff laid out in this picture that's taken me 20 years to decipher. Aleister Crowley written the Book of the Law, and it took him the rest of his life to try and decipher. John Dee contacted his Enochian angels, and it's taken us hundreds of years to try and decipher, and we should get to that story of V, because that's an amazing little connection there.
Yeah, we can definitely do that in the second hour, because
communication going on.
Yeah.
What are you saying?
Oh, I was just saying we can definitely get on that on the second hour, because we haven't even got into Christmas or Santa Claus yet aspect of this. So, yeah, we'll definitely do that. So let's take a short break, and we'll get into like to the symbolism when we come back of the mushroom, and then we'll get into Santa Claus and Christmas and the mushroom, and then we'll get into V, because that's definitely something that just struck. I caught that on your site the other day, and I emailed you right after I read it, because I was just like, yeah, Freeman, that is great, because I was so curious myself I really was on the story behind this. I'm just like, okay, where's the real story on this? And leave it to Freeman. He gives us the real story, folks. So we'll bring that to you in the second hour. Stay tuned. You can listen to From the Bunker here on the Gear Radio Network with the guest Freeman from the Freeman Perspective. And then we'll catch you on the flip side of this.
Everything's connected together. Sun, the moon, and the stars, they affect each other. The tides, the animals, and all. And human beings are connected too. Whatever effect happens, little minute thing, 100 years, 1,000 years from now, it's going to affect you. Everything is connected together. We all connected together. Trust each other, work with each other, and this is the only way you're going to rise above all this little stuff going on underneath here.
I'm telling you stuff I wouldn't tell my closest friend. My mom made me play with Barbies until I was 12. I found G-Force action figures and made them fuck each other. I've eaten entire Lincoln Logs and passed them in one sitting. I played doctor with my next door neighbor. Fortunately, it was a girl. 20 years later, and two blocks down, I fucked a married boy. I was in a cow suit. In the elevator. I've jacked off a robot for money. I've brill creamed my pubic hair for posterity. I dug a hole to hell and then backed out at the last minute. I drink so I can become better looking. I'm carrying a six pack with me right now. I was given a plot in Indiana. I was promised if I shit on her face and then gave her a car wash, I could be buried for free.
I'm ashamed of what I've done.
One time my cousin Walter got this cat stuck in his ass. True story. He bought it at our local mall, so the whole fiasco wound up on the news. It was embarrassing for my relatives and all, but the next week he did it again. Different cat, same results, complete with another trip to the emergency room. So I run into him a week later in the mall and he's buying another cat. And I says to him, Jesus, Walt, what are you doing? You know you're just gonna get this cat stuck in your ass too, why don't you knock it off? And he said to me, Brody, how the hell else am I supposed to get the gerbil out? My cousin was a weird guy.
Thanks for tuning in to the Revere Radio Network. Remember, Revere Radio Network is listener-sponsored radio. Now, it's not all about the Benjamins, but believe me, that shit helps.
Money.
All right, welcome back to The Bunker here on RevereRadioNetwork.com. I'm your host, Dire Wolf, and with us tonight we still have Mr. Freeman from The Freeman Perspective, and we've been talking about Amanita muscaria and the roles it plays in religion and basically in self-thought and all kinds of other fun yummies. And basically, we'll talk a little bit about the symbolism of the mushroom. The gentleman I was talking about earlier, John Allegro, now, he points out in his works that the cross is merely the symbol of the mushroom, you know, just as the medical symbol, basically, you know, the snake-entwined staff, you know, with the, basically the winged disc found on, you know, all medical facilities, you know, is also just another ancient symbol of the mushroom. But you had mentioned something that James Arthur had said that I haven't heard yet, and what was that?
He's coming out with a new book with Jack Herer of The Emperor Wears No Clothes.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with that book.
They have discovered that if you take the Greek letters, or the Greek numbers, 600, 60, and 6, what you've got is a staff with a snake coiled around it, two snakes coiled around the first one for 600, one snake coiled around the staff for 60, and then just the snake symbol for 6. And so now they're coming to a realization that the caduceus is actually a combination of all these to make 666, which of course would fit well within my studies, because the use of 666 is just rampant and no one even sees it.
Yeah.
Right there on my website with the V article, VVV, that's 666 in Hebrew.
Well, it's just like VW.
Both of the, yeah. Magic is based in Hebrew and Greek. Or Latin. Greek, yes.
Well, yeah, it's...
Losing my marbles.
It's all good. I lost them long ago,
so...
Both
languages to decipher the symbols.
Yeah. Well, another thing, you know, that was James Arthur had pointed out, and John Allegro, he also was the first one to point this out, was, now, and I know you know a lot about symbolism, so that's why I, you know, really enjoy having you on tonight talking about this, because I don't know, you know, John Allegro saying the round circle with the cross in it, you know, in the middle, it looks like basically the crosshairs, that's the symbol of the mushroom, and... You know, and that, of course, that's, you know, the symbol the Pope uses and, of course, hides behind with his little staff because he has it on top of it and this, you know, heads behind it all the time. So, you know, he's like, hey, I know it and I got it, but I ain't giving it to you. You know, it's just like, you know, James Arthur said, you know, the Pope's got dope and he ain't giving me none. And it's true. I mean, they know about these things, and that's why I think they have them illegal, and that, you know, they're making all these herbs illegal on top of it, you know, but to... We'll get into that later, maybe, but, you know, the symbolism, what do you know of basically the crosshairs, the cross in the circle?
Well, it was what, you know, I was focusing on the caduceus when you were talking about that. I was thinking, because right now, for me, still the circle around the crosshairs is an astrological theme, but the caduceus now, when we're looking at it, it's entwined serpents and the ball on top of the staff, we've got absolute reference to the DNA coil and the pituitary gland. And, of course, all of its connections with psychic powers. And as far as the cross goes, I don't know if I'm ready to jump there yet as far as being a mushroom symbol.
Well, I know one thing that, you know, you turned me on to really well tonight, and I know I'm going to go play around with it a lot now. I'd heard about it, and just through James Arthur at this lecture I was at of his, I don't know, it was like 4 years ago or so, down in Bend, Oregon, and he was talking about the first time he'd ever heard of the Amanita muscaria was at a UFO conference in the 70s. And, you know, I just laughed my ass off when I heard that. I'm like, no doubt. You know, I heard it from a mycologist friend, but he was sitting there talking about that,
You know, he'd heard about him at a UFO conference, and that it was a way to talk to these aliens. And I was like, wow, you know, that's an interesting point. And then you bring up the point about, you know, Cirrus and all this, and it's, yeah, definitely crazy. I'm sorry I didn't turn off the caller thingy, but oh well. I'm sure we can live with a couple beeps. But it definitely strikes interesting with me, and I need to do some research on that. Do you have anything for me and the listeners to go check that out?
Well,
as far as talking about
mushrooms, the works of Robert Anton Wilson.
The works of who? I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
The works of who?
Robert Anton Wilson.
Oh, Robert Anton Wilson. Okay.
The Cosmic Trigger.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Very familiar now. All right.
I think this. I mean, other than Terrence McKenna and Robert Anton Wilson, I don't know that I have anybody else.
Yeah, Terrence McKenna.
Definitely all of Terrence McKenna's work.
Yeah, Terrence McKenna was definitely a beautiful cat. We'll miss him much, that's for sure. You know, if you want to know anything about psychedelics, that was the man to listen to, and he did leave us plenty of work before he left this realm. But he does have plenty of work out there, and I would suggest that's mandatory materials if you've never experienced psychedelics. But don't do half of whatever Terrence tells you to start with. That's all I can say. Terrence was a man that could play hard, that's for sure. I love to play hard myself, but not very many people can, and I take my friends where I take myself, and sometimes they go somewhere else too, because I learned to keep them a little lower just so they will end up in the same place with me, because people are different. Some people can play harder than others with things like that, and they just happen to be able to do that. Thank God. It's within my DNA structure, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I truly do believe it is. My life kind of proves it for me with all of my bloodline connections and then how I just naturally became what I am now.
Yeah.
and all the studies that I've done all interrelate with my genetic line. So I do believe that it has a lot to do with it. And, you know, there's a lot of connections with a natural DMT production within the body and sightings of UFOs.
Yeah.
Have you heard of that?
I've heard Terrence McKenna talk about that. He was talking about, you know, it's amazing how you can take this piece of, you know, the substance, the size of a grain of rice, and, you know, go see UFOs and go into all kinds of places. And, you know, I could totally believe that. I remember I was at a Wavy Gravy's Hog Farm, and this was back in 93, and I was at the Picnic, a Labor Day festival there in Northern California, and Leftover Salmon was playing at the time, and I was extremely psychedelic. When I mean extreme, I was very, very psychedelic. And I was seeing these UFOs, and I took pictures of them, and I had my camera with me, so happened, and I took pictures of them. After Leftover Salmon set was over, the UFOs were gone, and that was the first time I'd ever heard that band, too, so I went back around the backstage area to go talk to them and, you know, tell them how much I appreciated their music and that I got UFO pics while they were playing. And they're like, you know, just out there right off stage and what have you. And they're like, man, you got to send us prints. I'm like, give me an address and I'll send you prints when I get them. And I went and developed the photos, and they came out. But I swear, they were like a jellyfish is what they looked like. And they were transparent almost. And it was crazy. I have a lot of people tell me there were weather balloons, but there was three weather balloons, okay? So, but they were transparent. They were like the cap of a mushroom, basically. They reminded me of a jellyfish is what they reminded me of, just without the tentacles. And it was definitely out there and crazy. And the photographs showed right. I thought maybe it was just that I was loaded as hell, but no, the photographs actually showed that there was jellyfish out there that were transparent and yummy.
Have you seen the Columbia space shuttle footage?
The Columbia space shuttle footage?
The extraterrestrial craft that were all around.
Oh, yeah, I have seen that. I've actually got about...
transparent jellyfish-like as well.
I've got like 5 hours of space footage showing all kinds of craziness. And, of course, I got about 2 hours of NASA debunking all of it. Oh, well,
right.
That was this optical...
The
lens got kind of...
Engine,
yeah. It's just kind of like on the moon landing thing when they show, you know, how close they are or how far they are from the Earth, and then they all screw up because the lights come on in the cabin, and they show the guy's not up against the window like he was supposed to be, and he had that, you know, they had all that gear set up. Oh, really? I'll have to find that and send it to you, because it's classic. When I do find it, I'll post it up on MySpace also, because that's a great video to check out. So
yeah, if you could send me that space footage too, I could use it on the show.
Yeah, I'll mail that to you. Actually, I'll put that on disk and mail you all the space footage I got. So, because I got a lot of space footage, so definitely got that stuff. And I'll hook you up with that. In fact, I think I have the original moon landing too, all the original footage.
Nice.
So yeah,
I could use this opportunity to give you and the listeners my P.O. box.
Oh, there you go.
P.O. Box 4051, Austin, Texas, 78765-4051. I'll just make that out to Freeman. And if you're interested in the DVD, just stick a $20 bill in there, or if you need to write me a check or a money order or whatever, mail it on us, and that's my address.
And I definitely suggest people
or
get
you
the
can
DVD.
Order off the website, of course.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we're a paranoid bunch. Not too many people are ready to go sticking their credit card in this machine yet.
I hear that. Yeah, I definitely suggest people go get Freeman's videos. They're, like I said, they're something you can watch with your family or give to family members. It's 3 hours of some of the greatest information. There's like 6 different programs on it covering different subjects, anywhere from symbolism to Freemasonry.
HARP,
which is just beautiful. So well done, Freeman. And your chemtrails, I thought, was the very best document I've seen yet on chemtrails. Hands down, I thought your work was just spectacular there. I've been looking for someone to put it all in a piece and just say, hey, this is what's going on and this is why. And when you have HARP going down with that, that's just such a great combination. It's a 1-2 punch, and yeah, big kudos for that. And then, of course, another document on the rainbow, and which is just also extremely well done and has me thinking hard, so... we'll get to that maybe a little later, too. Well, I guess we should possibly bring up old Saint Nick, since we've teased him a couple times to the listeners. And
I can't hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I figured we'd tease him with... we've been teasing him all night with the listeners with old Saint Nick, so...
And
basically the psychedelic secrets of Santa Claus that are all so hidden. And, you know, people... I'll think, you know, they have these modern Christmas traditions are all based on ancient mushroom-using shamans. The whole thing is. And that's what's all fun about this yummy Christian holiday, you know, is all these symbols and icons that everybody associates with Christmas celebrations are actually derived from these shamanistic traditions of, you know, tribal peoples in of pre-Christian Northern Europe. And,
holiday.
Exactly. It's winter time. It's cold, but check this out. Look what's growing underneath the trees. And that's also, you know, where we come up with the Christmas tree. You know, a lot of these major elements of this modern Christmas celebration we have going. You know, basically, you know, we got Santa Claus and Christmas trees and these magical reindeer. Which,
hey, well, you just think about it. You know, Santa Claus is red, white, and black, just like me and Anita.
Uh huh.
Mushroom is the gift under the tree that you unwrap and take, and when you do, then you see sparkly lights.
Yeah, it's very much so. And the Amanita happens to come out in the wintertime, so especially in Europe. And, you know, it's also...
grows in the North Pole, and the reindeer there, they eat it.
Yeah.
And when they do, they dash, dance, and prance all around.
There you go. Oh, that's that.
You've got Dasher, Dancer, and Prancer.
Nice.
But just to go a little bit further, you've got Donner and Blitzen. Okay? Well, that's Thunder and Rain. What brings the Amanita to the fold? What brings it up from the ground?
Well, yeah, they always thought the gods would bring down the Mushroom and Thunder. And, of course, because the mushroom, when it spores out, you know, it ejaculates its spores, and it has, like, this sperm milky color crap that comes out. But it comes out, like you said, it busts open, so it's like this thunderous opening. So it was definitely struck by lightning and come from the gods. So definitely, and, you know...
If you're ever wondering where the names of the reindeer came from, that's why they dash, dance, and prance. That's why Donner and Blitzen are in there. And then the vixen is the one that prepares the brew.
Yeah.
And you get heralded by the comet. And, of course, Rudolph was a later addition, and he doesn't count.
Yeah, definitely they needed their Jesus. I didn't mean
that's
that.
That's where the Santa Claus ritual comes from.
Yeah, very much so.
And then, of course, the elves we've already been discussing. And these are the little critters that you see manufacturing the world inside of your mushroom head.
Yeah, you know, and you,
no doubt about it.
And you look at the amanita.
Is an amanita.
Yeah, and you look at the amanita mushroom, and it, you know, it grows, you know, only under certain types of trees, and they're mostly like firs and evergreens, and you know the mushroom caps of the fruit, they're so much bigger. You know, it's the mycelium's very much, you know, larger, you know, beneath the soil. And so it's this, you know, the symbiotic relationship, basically, you know, with the roots of the tree, you know, to the, you know, all the ancient people, basically, and that's why they were the fruit of the tree. So that's where it comes back to the Adam and Eve story, you know, of eating the forbidden fruit, because, you know, the ancients even considered, you know, the Amanita muscaria being the fruit of the tree, because the mycelium runs, you know, so large and deep. Rather than, you know, the mushroom itself. So, and then, you know, like you said earlier about the, you know, we're talking, you know, Santa Claus and the tree, and, you know, then we got the North Star also, or the North Pole, you know, which, you know, because we got the North Star, which is also very, you know, it's considered very sacred, you know, and since all the other stars and, you know, in the sky revolved around, you know, it's this one fixed point, they associated the Pole Star with the World Tree and the central axis of the universe, basically. So the top of the World Tree touched the North Star, and then the spirit of the shaman would climb this metaphorical tree, and, you know, basically passing into the realm of the gods, you know, according to them. And this is, you know, this is the true meaning of the star on the top of, you know, what we call the Christmas tree, and also the reason that, you know, the super shaman Santa makes his home at the North Pole. So you basically gotta love how these people, you know, they were flabbergasted, you know, just totally blown away by these mushrooms. You know, they sprang from the ground without any seed, and, you know, so they, you consider that a virgin birth. And then you got your morning dew, you know, which is basically the semen of the, you know, deity they were talking about. And then, you know, the silver tinsel that you drape around your Christmas tree represents the fluids of these characters.
And on that point, I'm going to go out mushroom picking. Always remember to flick the cap. Make sure those spores drop before you take that thing away. Be able to come back and get more, right?
There you go. Yeah, definitely crazy, man. It's like, and we were talking earlier about, you know, how the urine consumption, you know, the mushrooms. And, you know, this is what these ancients would use all the time in Northern Europe. And, because it passes through the body like 7 times. So you can take like 7, you know, you can get some people loaded. Just one person can. So you only need a few mushrooms to get a group of people just going. And amazing the things you might be able to come by. And like you were saying at the very beginning of our broadcast, you know, people need not to fight this new world order. You need to open up your mind to who you are and find yourself. You're not going to beat this monster until that is the way of beating it, is being yourself, find yourself. And just being yourself and doing things, that's not going to do it. You truly have to find yourself. I haven't found myself. I figure I'll find myself about the time I die. I hope I do. I hope I do. You know? And if I do, great. And if I don't, well, fuck. I guess I get to try again. I don't know. But I know I get to go to a psychedelic realm again, just like in the state I was born. So, you know, there's basically nothing bad about that. So,
I don't know. It prepares you. It opens you up to these.
I found out something, you know, a lot of scholars are, you know, kind of bitching about, but, you know, like we were talking about the urine concept of this, you know, it was this common practice, you know, among these ancient Europeans to, you know, recycle their, you know, mushroom drinking through the urine, just like you were talking about the South Americans doing the same. You know, you can't pee on the ground. You consume it. And basically, the, you know, Amanita's ingredients, you know, it's really potent stuff, so we can pass it quite a few times. And a lot of scholars, they argue that, you know, this is the origin of the phrase to get pissed, you know, and, you know, because, you know, basically, you know, the urine drinking activity preceded, you know, alcohol by, what, 1,000 years, 2,000 years? So, well, at least 1,000 years. But,
Yeah, talk about drinking the blood and the heating the flesh of Christ, huh?
Yeah. Well, you know, like, you know, like we were talking earlier about, you know, that when we first, talked about the possible use of it, you know, because the alchemists have always known about this and used it. I've studied alchemy for years, and, actually, I've been studying alchemy since I was about 12. It's always interested me. The first I ever heard about it, I remember it's like, to make gold? Interesting. I'd never, you know, what? What do you mean to make gold? And, well, been figuring that out. And to make gold is to make your mushroom, as far as I know. And then the true alchemy begins. That's when your alchemy begins, as far as I'm concerned. But,
and they say there are no more lands to conquer. Still got one more.
Yeah.
Inside.
Well, you know, also, when it comes back into the, you know, going back into the urine, the effect, you know, it goes the other way, too, because, you know, the reindeer, they like urine of humans. So, and especially ones who eat mushrooms, because the reindeer like the mushrooms. And, like you were speaking earlier about... about their names and stuff, which is just great, you know, but and this is a fact. Reindeer, they'll seek out human piss to go drink, and, you know, some tribesmen still, basically, they would carry, you know, containers and put their piss, you know, in it, and they use it to, you know, attract stray reindeer back into the herd. So they don't gotta go chase the bastards, they just go eat some mushrooms and piss in a jug and go spread it around and lead the reindeer back to the herd. So, you know, definitely some interesting things when it comes to this fun little mushroom and all the yumminess of it. But you know, Santa Claus, you know, he's definitely the super shaman as far as everything's concerned. Now, you know a lot about this as far as Santa Claus goes, don't you?
No. I was very curious about who the heck Santa Claus was.
Yeah.
And when I finally got... Because, you know, I wondered, Satan Claus? I'm like, what is this?
Well, that's what I've always said.
You know, who is this character?
That's...
And, you know, my research just came with the Christmas tale and its connections with the Amanita. But old Saint Nick, I haven't delved into him yet.
Well, and old Nick is a word for Satan, so it's it's an old word for Satan, which is kind of funny. But, you know, basically, you know, we got the modern image of Santa Claus, you know, which is created at least in part by, you know, the advertising department of Coca-Cola, Basically, you know, it's the hallmark of these ancient, you know, gathering shamans, these mushroom shamans, and, you know, it's all these one, you know, all these things, but, you know, even Santa's, you know, jolly ho-ho-ho is the it's the laugh of, you know, a person who's ingested, you know, magic fungus, you're gonna, you know, you're like, oh, you know, it's, that's what you are. You know, that's ho, ho, ho for you.
And,
oh, yeah, you know, and then we got Santa also dressing like a mushroom gatherer. You know, it's time to go out and harvest these magical mushrooms. You know, the ancient shamans, they dress, you know, a lot like Santa, wearing red and white fur-trimmed coats with these long black boots, you know. And
where we get the whole Easter egg hunt from.
You know, that's, you know, these are the people that, you know, they made, you know, made of, like, birch and reindeer hide. What we know of, like, you know, yurts, these are the ones who started them. These are the same people who started yurts, which are awesome place to live in if you look at just escaping this world and go get you like an acre of BLM land or something and just build you a yurt. And if they come to take you out, well, then you can just take your yurt apart and go. But they got to take you out first. But, yeah, you know, they would sit there and make those and, you know, they got to climb, you know, they would basically, you know, after gathering all their mushrooms, you know, they got to get into their yurt. You know, and, you know, they would fill, you know, they'd come by in the Christmas time because this is where the gift giving comes about it, and they'd fill other people's sacks, you know, full of the mushrooms, and those were the gifts to give with, you know, because you're supposed to give, you know, it's the, you know, it's the gifts time and what have you, but you're supposed to give gifts within, and yeah, well, that would be a gift within. If someone gave me a big sack of mushrooms for Christmas, I'd be like, thank you, brother. You know, I'm going to go get spiritual now. And that's what I do with my mushrooms. It's how can you not be spiritual with them? I can't.
Exactly.
I can't
we've
think
been
why.
So torn away from that realm. We've been ostracized from the realm of spirit.
I know this place. It's about an hour and a half from me. It's called Silver Creek Falls. And it's one of the most beautiful places on earth I have ever been. It truly is. And in the fall time, there's like 16 waterfalls going. And you can go walk underneath like four of them. And they're huge waterfalls. And it's an all old growth forest, so there's hardly any sun that comes in. It could be a bright sunshiny day, but you won't see hardly any of it. It's always dark in that forest. But I was there here about a year ago, and I was very heavily dosed. And I was grabbing onto this tree and I was hugging it to peek over this large cliff to check out this waterfall. I wanted to see all the wash and hit, you know, watch it hit the rocks. And I'm tripping quite heavily. And I look down. I'm sitting there playing with it and I'm going further and further to see further. And then I look down at my feet and I'm off the cliff basically and on this tree's roots. And this tree is like overhanging the cliff. So I'm like a half an inch from death. And I freaked out.
Made a bad statistic.
And I freaked out, but I still made it out of there. I was able to back out, and I was extremely loaded, so it wasn't a... I'm glad I didn't go out that way. It would have been a Darwin Award if I did, but... It was definitely a... That was my bad experience with mushrooms as far as that went, just that moment. And after I was
it's
away
really,
from it...
Oh, it is opening yourself up to a sense of wonder. And it's when you open this realm inside yourself, through hallucinogenics or even through conspiracy theory, as you're looking at the image and letting your imagination open to any of the possibilities that are involved, and you're not rigid in your dogma, and you're not fighting for your life, and you're just in the moment, in the now, and enjoying. And this is so critical to the consciousness of humanity. I don't think, you know, as when I lived in Lawrence, Kansas, the governor there was going to mass dose the water system with LSD. I don't think that, you know, everybody needs to dose. Absolutely not. And I find it interesting that the differences between black people and white people with hallucinogenics, I don't know if you've come across this, but... black people don't typically, I don't mean this to be generalities, but typically don't like hallucinogens. I've had a lot of black friends, they don't like it. And it's not common within their culture either. It's not something that gets passed around. It's mostly us white folks, which I find really intriguing in the whole aspect of the
So you're talking of the Aryan, basically.
Yes.
Yeah.
As I look deeper and deeper, just to branch out and go on a little bit of a tangent, into the origin of white people, the Caucasians that dropped down into the Caucasus Mountains and slowly took over the world. When we go into deprivation, sensory deprivation, which also is highly recommended for when you're on mushrooms, you know, you don't want to go to a party atmosphere. It's all an internal trip, so you want to be in as much a sensory-deprived situation as possible, and then travel internally. The white man will cycle back to a Martian time code. We'll go to a Martian cycle where we're waking and sleeping on a Martian daytime. And black people will stay within an Earth vibration and cycle in a 24-hour time.
So they're not genetically manipulated, or they are, just not to the extent.
Well, I think white people are from Mars, and Earth people are the natural inhabitants of Earth, and that's why the Atlanteans/Martians have always sought to dominate and rule them, and even think of them as less than human.
Yeah.
Because they believe all my evidence and symbolism and everything that I look at shows me that Mars is Atlantis, and that Mars is where the white folk come from.
Yeah.
Even just something as, well, not simple, but corn is not even an Earth-based entity.
It's alien.
It likely comes from Mars as well, because there is no such thing as a natural corn. It does not sprout or regrow. You can't just leave corn and let it grow. There's no such thing as wild corn. It can only be cultivated. And it was brought down, according to the Egyptians, by Osiris, who also brought hemp, barley, wheat, and all the other intoxicants that we use, the god of hemp, barley, wheat, corn.
Yeah, because the Egyptians created beer.
He brought us alcohol. He brought us all of that stuff. And none of it is earth-based. It's, or at least certainly not corn. It's not an earth-based plant. So, for me, these things all got to come together. I'm looking for that unified conspiracy theory. And so all aspects got to be filtered in and cycled through. So even in the idea of psilocybin, perhaps because it's an extraterrestrial entity as well. It's the only element, according to Terrence McKenna's research, I had to look up what an indole was, and honestly, even after looking up and reading it, I couldn't tell you. But it is the only thing on Earth that has a four-substituted indole, as everything else on Earth has a three-substituted indole, if it has a substituted indole. And the psilocybin mushroom is the only one that is not at all like any other thing on planet Earth.
And grows everywhere on Earth.
And it grows on every continent, and it spreads itself perfectly. It's a fantastic form of communication, and it is a symbiotic relationship that we have with the mushroom.
Oh, very much so. Well, it's just like the symbiotic relationship it has with trees and how we have the tree of life, etc., etc. I think Cortez would be pretty pissed off if he found out, here we go, we got the fountain of youth and the fountain of life right here, and when he ran into Florida, and of course he ignored the fact that it was there. So, oh well, because you have the Tampianus there in Florida, which is just amazing. That's the best mushroom I've ever eaten, as far as just tasting and just peacefulness. It truly is. It's quite, yeah. If you're going to talk about bliss, I would say the Tampianus it's referred to as philosopher's stone. It's quite nice. I enjoy it. It tastes like a sweet almond is what it tastes like. It's weird. They're soft and they're not chewy at all, and they taste like a sweet almond. Not bad at all. Very interesting. I found them in Europe is where I found them, and I thought they were a European thing at first until I did the research on them and found out they're from Florida. So, Tampianus vulgaris, I think, is the name for them or something like that. But they're quite potent.
Definitely don't want to be going through the. We should put this out there. Don't go through the woods and try every mushroom you see.
Oh God,
this is a very, very bad idea.
Oh, no, no, no. In fact, yeah, you need to have some...
Do your homework. Find out what you're looking for. And
find
know
a mycologist.
What it is that you're taking.
Find a mycologist is what I say. And he'll have the spores for you, or he'll grow for you. And
for those day and age, you can pretty much,
Yeah, in
but
fact...
there's nothing like the
they are legal.
Going out to the field yourself.
Oh, exactly.
That's the most amazing experience is just walking the field. You'll start to trip before you ever found a mushroom. And what I really found most amazing about mushroom hunting was we would walk 3-4 fields. Now, I want to again put out there that the farmer will shoot you. Okay, so you got to keep that in mind as well.
Oh, very much so. We got caught one time in Oregon. You know, we were in, in the middle of the state, actually, of Oregon. And we were hunting up mushrooms. We were driving down the interstate, and we had a cooler. We had a Coleman cooler, and it was full of cannabis. And we just scored some cannabis down in Utah. We got a good deal from a friend of ours that lived down there, and we wanted to go camp out for a while. So went down there and picked up this herb, and we were coming back up. We got this big Coleman cooler full of herb, and we're driving on the interstate, and we sit there and see this just these huge, massive pastures, huge cow pastures, that have sprinklers going on them. And it's Oregon. It rains all the time. I mean, all the time. It's a coastal state. And we're like, what the hell? And it was kind of rainy weather. So we got off on that exit, and we're like, we're going mushroom hunting, boys. This is going to be nice. Oh, there was just tons of them. And so we were just having a gay old time and filling up our little sacks full of mushrooms. Next thing we knew, we had a shotgun on us, and it was not a good thing. It was he did not shoot, thank God. We got really lucky, which he had every right to shoot us, because you are trespassing. And we talked our way out of it by telling him he said, well, you think I put water these fields for nothing?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, sorry, man. And so we apologized, and we ended up trading some herb out for the mushrooms that we had picked, and he was very cordial after that, because we gave him a nice sack, and he gave us a nice sack, and it ended up turning out all right. But like Freeman said, don't just go into anyone's field. That's not a good idea. If you live in Oregon, you happen to be in one of the luckiest people in this country, because you have mushrooms in your yard more than likely. We have Liberty Caps everywhere. I personally don't eat the Liberty Cap, just because I don't care for the places I go with it, just because it doesn't take me where I want to go. It has a very up-down thing, and I can't get with that rhythm or tempo. That's why I like to stick with true psilocybin, and I would suggest definitely the Amazonian penis envy if you can get a hold of it. It is a wonderful fungus, and you can definitely talk to God. And that is if you're into that type of
thing.
Magical in many ways. They're an amazing thing. I love the substance more than any other intoxicant, I guess, as some people would put it. But I don't find it is an intoxicant. It does give me a drunk euphoric state. But like I said, I do journey into another realm that I truly enjoy. I love getting back to nature and into my soul, and I find it a great way to find myself. And it's not for everyone. It's definitely not for everyone, but I think most people, especially if you're a free thinker, I think it would be for about 80% of free thinkers. There's 20% out there that would probably go, my God, what the hell? But, yeah.
And always going through the threshold, and that's what I call it, because that's what, you know, as you're entering the trip, when you're going through the threshold, it's a frightening experience. I mean, you know, that moment will always cause panic, or you haven't done enough.
Yeah, if you panic...
That moment when the world starts to alter before your eyes, it totally causes panic. But at the, then, once you're in it, you've forgotten all about that. You know, the panic is long gone.
Yeah.
And you're in this other realm and just experiencing and exploring it.
Well, it was like my first experience with Salvia Divinorum was very, very dark and very spooky. And I had done many a psychedelic journeys, and so I didn't think, you know, it could be that dark and that spooky, so I didn't do it for years afterwards.
And I'm in that same boat,
and
I even went amnesiac, and I won't touch the stuff again. I mean, I'm not dogmatic, so who knows, but
well, let's put it this way,
I'm not at all.
I was the same way, and I even grew some that I wouldn't even smoke it. It just took me into a dark place until I found this, it was a Mahakan Gold, or Mahakan Prime Harvest, or Oaxacan, I'm sorry, Oaxacan Prime Harvest is what it was called. And I was getting it from a friend in Portland, and, he was getting it out of Mexico. And he said, "You really need to try this." And I'm like, "No, bro, I don't like salvia. It's just, it's too dark for me. It takes me into this dark realm, and I don't like it." And he says, "No, you really need to try this. This is something like you've never done before." So I'm like, okay. So I gave me a sack of it. I took it home. I tried it. And I'm telling you straight up, Freeman, it's still one of the very best trips to this day I've ever had. I ended up getting it from him for about a year. I haven't been able to contact him. So, Ethan, if you catch this broadcast, call me, you bastard. But, or email me at dwolf420.com or at yahoo.com. But, yeah, I...
One of the side effects that I had with the salvia was an ego slip. And it really got me to thinking about a whole lot of things, because after I had done it for the next year, I would have the sensation of myself just vanishing. And this is something that really needs to be thought about, because what happens when the ego dies? What's left, and what's functioning, and what does it know, and what does it remember? Because you can absolutely prove to yourself that there is another higher mind on top of the ego mind, and of course this was all deciphered before, but it brought up some very serious questions, and it really freaked me out, and that was one of the main reasons I didn't want to go back to it. Because I kind of like my ego, as we all do, and I didn't want it to go away, and I wasn't sure what would be left. But I would literally hold my head to keep myself inside myself for nearly a year after smoking it just once. And I also had major, you know, the sleep spindles, the falling feeling when you're going to sleep. Mine quadrupled in depth. And to the point where every time I would try to fall asleep, as I was falling into sleep, I would fall so far that I'd grab onto whatever was around me.
I was the same. Actually, I was the same way after my first trip with that, and it did last quite a while. It was awful. I remember that. That was terrible. So
I did not like that.
I've had the same experience as far as that goes. But the salvia that I'd found, this Oaxacan Prime Harvest is what it was referred to, and I'm sure if you go surf enough on the net, you can run into it, and it was Oaxacan Prime Harvest, and that's all I remember about it. But I know this cat was grabbing it off the net, I don't know where though, and it was the brightest thing I'd ever done. And another friend of mine that had grown salvia and experienced the same things I had, as far as being negative, I turned him on to this, and he was all about it. He was very excited also, and we had eaten some mushrooms one night and decided to smoke some salvia.
Okay.
And so we smoked salvia first and then ate some mushrooms. And then we were going to smoke some more salvia as we peaked on the mushrooms. Well, by the time we peaked on the mushrooms, no, we didn't want any more salvia, because the last time I tripped with salvia was that time. And my, oh my, it was very, very intense, but it was very nice. And the same with the mushrooms. And so we couldn't, yeah. Terrence McKenna might have played that one, but we were not. Yeah, it was not for us.
I'm in line for an ayahuasca ceremony. I'm going to be...
I have never done that.
Real soon.
I have not done ayahuasca yet. In fact, I've been talking to a friend of mine here in Portland, my old roommate Jake. We're talking about going to South America here in about a year and a half, 2 years, and going and playing. And he won't play the ayahuasca thing, but I sure will. And I'll go play in Peru for a week or so out in the jungle. That will not hurt my feelings one bit. I figure if any place to find yourself, it would be out in the middle of absolutely nowhere, high as a goddamn kite on a really nice ayahuasca trip. And from what I hear, ayahuasca, we produce naturally. Like I spoke at the beginning of the show with James Arthur, you know, he was speaking of how, you know, we're born into a psychedelic state and how we die in a psychedelic state. And Tessarian also says the same thing, basically. And, well, basically, not exactly that way. But, you know, we also, Terrence McKenna, he'll state that ayahuasca and the brain, that how they make ayahuasca and the chemicals that ayahuasca has that it produces, that we ingest, we produce those exact same chemicals, but we only have them when we're born and when we die. We lose them as we grow older, and we lose them rapidly. And so it was
one of the really amazing things about the ayahuasca ceremony or just the ingestion is that it doesn't work on its own. It has to have the second ingredient, the MOA inhibitor, to keep your stomach from allowing passage of this into your bloodstream without destroying it. And the odds, some people have looked into the odds of finding these two particular plants and bringing them together, and the odds are just astronomical that a aboriginal tribe could have just managed to find these two roots or two plants and combine them to make them work in ayahuasca. And either we're jumping to the idea of plant speak, which I do firmly believe in. I absolutely, I definitely ask my food what it, you know, or my body which food it wants, and it will talk to the food and decide what it feels like eating that day.
I do the exact same thing, Freeman. That's great, because, no, I try to explain that to people. They're like, well, what do you want to eat? And I'm like, I don't know. I haven't talked to my body about it yet, or it's not talking to me. It hasn't said anything to me yet. When it does, I'll let you know, because I shop daily. I have to shop daily almost to go eat. I can't sit there and go to the grocery store or, you know, to any market and sit there and buy food for a week or for 3 weeks. It's like, what? I couldn't do that.
No, yeah, you never know, you don't. And it was even proven to me by Deepak Chopra when I was reading Perfect Health, and I took his little test in that book. That's a fantastic book, by the way. I highly recommend Perfect Health. But I took the test, and it tells you which parts of your body are out of whack, and then suggests a diet for that. And as I looked down the diet, everything on the list of things that I should eat were things that I crave, and everything on the list that I shouldn't eat were things that I naturally stayed away from. So I was like, well, that's easy enough.
Yeah, that completely makes sense to me, because I listen to my body all the time on what it wants to consume. And, you know, I'm not a big person at all. I mean, I'm only like 5'9 at night and 5'10 in the morning. And, you know, shit, I'm only like 140, 145 pounds on any given day. And I think I gained like 100. I think the most I ever weighed was like 160, and that's when I was playing in Europe, because I would eat like 5 square meals a day. And you just smoke. Well, at least I did. I smoked so much herb and so much hash. And I treated myself well when it came to food. It was like, okay, let's just fill up, boys. And, yeah, that's definitely a. But
diet is so critically important to changing reality. I mean, you know, if we're even talking suicide or whatever, just your diet has such a major play. And all these people on the fast food, and of course, you know, I decipher the occultic symbolism of these fast food chains, and they're all occultic, and feeding us this non-food
it's very much so non-food. It's disgusting. You know, I haven't eaten fast food in probably, I don't know, 7-8 years. Well, unless you call bar food fast food, but it takes them like 15-20 minutes. And
yeah,
they do make me spinach salad, so that's all good. And because I got to eat those things at least 3-4 times a week. I got an email from a friend of mine earlier today, and I guess she ate some spinach. I didn't hear about it. I don't know. I don't watch television, but apparently it was on the news. Northwest got hit with some E. coli spinach.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I hadn't heard nothing about it. Apparently it wasn't bad enough to put on Yahoo News when I went to answer my email. So that's about.
Yeah, I've heard about them spraying fecal matter to kill the germs on the food, right?
Yeah, exactly. But you know what? One thing is really crazy, and I wanted to mention this to you because I never did the last time we spoke, and this is to get on the aspect of your videos, which people really should grab. For $20, it's a steal. It's 3 hours of just absolutely wonderful information. You'll watch it 20 times just because it's that much. It's great. It truly is, and you'll be like, God, I need to go watch that again, because I'm that way with it anyway. I watch it at least once or twice a week, and it's definitely well worth it.
Definitely takes a couple times.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you want to ingest it and get it, and I don't know, I find you entertaining as hell, Freeman. You crack me up all the time. So I do. I sit there and get loaded and have a good time, and I watch your video at least, like I said, about once a week, just because it's a good time to watch, and it kills 3 hours when I have 3 hours to kill. But the deal on the chemtrails and what have you, you know, I remembered I was visiting my grandma in Idaho, and this was about 6 years or so ago, and I'm going to have to go look up the news story because it was big news. It really was. They had it on the local news in Boise for like the whole time I was out there, which was like 2 weeks or something like that. And there was this stuff dropping in this little town outside of Boise. It's just like a metro Boise, just like the very outskirts of it. It was like called Star or something like that. But they had this substance that was falling from the sky out of nowhere, and it was like this gooey crap nasty stuff, and it was falling out of nowhere, and no one can explain it, and the EPA was out there, and they're like, oh, I don't know what it is. No one ever found out. I remember I called my grandma and be like, hey, you know, what's up with that, and da-da-da-da-da. Well, I don't know, no one ever found out, and basically the story just died. But
in Kansas City, there was a report on the news of thousands of birds that just dropped dead over the Kansas City park. And there were just dead birds lying everywhere. And then the news was showing these people walking around going, ooh, it's gross, ooh, it's gross. And that was their reporting. And then they had the specialist on, and he said, I don't know, it could be poisoning. And they dropped the story right there and went into a 15-minute diatribe on the dangers of the squirrel. I'm not kidding you. Thousands of birds dropped dead over Kansas City. I don't know what year this was.
Well, my thing is, too, it's like my old roomie Jake that I was talking about, he comes on the show every once in a while, Jake Lopan. He's absolutely wonderful. And this guy, one thing we were talking to each other about when we were, you know, figuring out kind of what was going on, and we always knew something was going on, we just didn't know how big it was, right? I mean, we knew it was big, we just didn't know where it went, and who was involved with it, and, you know, we didn't know who Don Corleone was, still don't, but, you know, we just knew there was this huge group, and where does this spider web go? And that's exactly what it is, it's a massive spider web that you gotta follow everywhere. But, we were always saying, you know, well, we'll head to the woods, you know, what's a good sign to head to the woods? And it's like when birds start dropping, you know, fucking get the fuck out, you know, don't hang out there no more, man. Birds start dropping, you better get the hell out of Dodge now. I mean, why do you think that coal miners take canaries in with them, people? I mean, my God, it's just simple.
Yeah, and this was almost,
simple logic.
And it's at least 6-7 years ago. And, you know, but they, you know, just one point about running to the woods, as long as we're on the topic of chemtrails. And,
well, yeah, because you were talking about this last time, but please bring it up again, because this is great. Yeah, barium.
You do know, you know, you show up on radar, so just keep that in mind.
And that's just yummy. And, you know, did you see It was posted up today. I was playing through MySpace, which I'm absolutely addicted to right now for some reason. I don't know. Sonny Crack was saying it was Satan. So, but I don't know. I'm addicted to it, so it could be satanic. I'm not sure yet, but
www.template666.
Oh, I know, but you know, hey, and it was created by DARPA, you know. Seriously, people, yeah. The internet was
honestly, just to throw this out, I see it as us trying to reform what we have naturally through a material realm. You know, it is our collective consciousness that is now the web.
Well, do you think they're actually this is what I'm looking at. I mean, I don't know, we should do a show on this actually, but just to get kind of like Matrix with you. But seriously, I mean, aren't they taking mankind? I mean, look at the way they're going to start biochipping us, you know, national ID crap, all this fun stuff. They want to track, trace absolutely everything. They got the RFID license plate coming out. It's coming out the end of this year in California. I know that much. They got all the little cameras set up here in Portland already for the RFID license plates. And there's these little sensors up above the bridges and what have you, and the overpasses. And they'll catch your stuff. And, of course, massive computers are like, well, they don't have enough people to, you know, to monitor all that. All right, think about where you live. Think about what you are saying when you say that. Think about what's happened in this last century. And think about what your government hides from you already that you know of. All right, you think that what we use is high technology? What we use is archaic.
Yeah.
Archaic technology. This is you could have the best computer on earth that money can buy you right now. You can go spend you $60,000 on the best sun system that's ever built, right? But that's archaic. That is archaic computer compared to what your government controls and what not just this government, governments, that's plural. I would say all the European governments, majority of Asian governments, well, not majority, China, Japan.
That Tesla had an electric car in 1931, and Hitler had a flying saucer by 1937.
Oh, exactly. And then we got, even History Channel admits that, the Foo Fighters, you know, that's what they were referred to by the Allied pilots were Foo Fighters, these UFOs that Hitler had. And they were.
I have a great video about that on my MySpace.
Nice. And what's your MySpace page, brother? We'll both pimp both of ours.
I'm Freeman TV.
Freeman TV. So it's myspace.com/FreemanTV for Freeman. And you can catch me, Dire Wolf, from the bunker here at myspace.com/DireWolf420. Huh, I wonder why that is. Maybe because that's 420. I don't know. But actually, it is 420, so we're going to take a short little break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about V, and, we'll talk about it, so you'll figure out what the hell we're talking about right when we come back. You've been listening to From the Bunker here on ReverRadioNetwork.com. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you on the flip side of this tune.
Today, a young man on acid realized that all matter is merely energy condensed to a slow vibration. That we are all one consciousness experiencing itself subjectively. There is no such thing as death. Life is only a dream, and we're the imagination of ourselves. Here's Tom with the weather. There is a point. I'm going to share with you. There is a point.
It's time to evolve.
There is a point.
I'm going to share with you the vision that I had.
There is a point.
And you feel it.
It's time to evolve. We're out of here.
It's time to evolve.
We're out of here.
It's time to evolve.
The world is on a ride at an amusement park. To go on it, you think it's real. That's how powerful our minds are. The ride goes up and down and round and round. It has thrills and chills, and it's very brightly colored, and it's very loud. And it's fun for a while. Some people have been on the ride for a long time. But the question is, is it real or is this just a ride? Other people have remembered and come back to us and say, hey, don't worry, don't be afraid, ever, because this is just a ride. And we
kill those people.
And I hope you enjoyed it.
Good afternoon. At the tone, Pacific Daylight Time will be 4:20 exactly.
You're done.
You know, I got two states of mind. Stoned and asleep. First I hit the sweet leaf and then I have nice dreams. When I get up, awake and bake, take a piss and shake. My clock stopped at 4:20, what you want me to say? I stay blazed all day, no matter where I'm creeping. Hot boxing on your block and at the spot on the weekends. You'll see smoke rising, just who could it be? It's my rhyme and crime partner, D-L-O-C-C.
Slid after me, born and raised in the suburbs. Faded off the blood smoke, don't it that you lurch. Thanks, Johnny Richter, for your nice little handoff. I got some purple cuss, did you bring the sandbox? Let's mount some buzz, we can make a little keef. Spice up the leaf before we smoke the tree. Everybody in the scene knows you know the most doja. That's why they label us the Cottonmouth Soldiers.
It's 4:00, yeah, our clocks is always on.
We took it down.
These anti-heroes are just here to serve you progress. So leave those blessings right up here upon the altar. At 4:00, everybody's burning ganja.
You catch me at the smoke out, dropping drinks, having a blast, not giving a fuck, doing my thing, blowing rings through the crowd, being loud and obnoxious. Now the shots I did with pop got me feeling kinda nauseous. But I played it cool and pulled a few snaps, big fat pack goals and had a chicken Caesar wrap. Dipping through the whole place, nowhere else I'd rather be than smoking weed with my peeps. Now I pass it to D.
24/7, every day, every minute, everybody, every stoner, grab your bud, keep your closure. Beer drinkers, beer poppers, ass heads and freaks, all the creatures in the street, heroin addicts and geeks. Mount King signed a one-way contract to see the world and smoke the killer quality. B-Lope said it, so don't you forget it. It's 4-4-2-0.
More like a stony musician, so I get a little help from my friends when they need. Hit the bubble, fuck double, now I'm seen in three.
4, 5, 6, double dash is deep. I'm always drinking beer and I'm always smoking weed. Hanging in the streets, just doing my thing. Putting it down for the herb with the cottonmouth gang.
All these hours and days in a face with a planet. With bubbles and bells, the cushion's orgasmic. I transplant my mantle to truly titanic. Fanatic levels for all you butt feeding addicts. The session begins right upstairs in my attic. We bless it, we roll it, we talk it and pass it. The next time you see us, don't take us for granted. We're all getting lifted just the way that we planned it. So,
F4 to 0, yeah, our clocks is always on.
We turn.
Alright everybody, welcome back to the bunker here on revereradionetwork.com. We still have our special guest with us tonight, Freeman, and he's gonna talk about V with us. So any of you who have watched V for Vendetta, you got some great listening right now because you're gonna, yeah, I was just absolutely loving this story that he'd posted up on his website earlier this week. So Freeman, I'll let you have the floor on this, brother.
Valorous visitation of a bygone vexation stands vivified and vowed to vanquish these venal and virulent vermin vanguarding bison, vouchsafing the violently vicious and voracious violation of volition. Oh, V, these Wachowski brothers, you know, they, people look at these films and they're like, oh, that's fantastic, oh my god, that's amazing, and they're brought into it. Now, honestly, it would take a bigger brain than mine, and perhaps, you know, if I have time, I'll go to the Matrix and decipher it. Certainly there's lots of clues in there, but V for Vendetta is just the ultimate story of trauma-based mind control coupled with false flag state-sponsored terrorism. I mean, these people are trying to convince you that blowing up their edifices of authority is a good answer to salvation. This is the craziest thing I've ever heard. And this story gets so deep, it's so bizarre. As we look to the symbols of V, and we find... Now, the article that I did on V, I had initially thought I was doing about the Nephilim. That was my original intention when I started to decipher the V logos of like Vantage, Visa, and VH1, and their sexual connotations.
Viacom.
So you have the post in between the legs of Vantage and the little yacht entering the V of VH1 or Visa. These are sexual symbols.
Did you check out Viacom?
What's that?
Did you check out Viacom?
Yeah, that comes later. That comes with the compass and square symbolism, which actually I was... Yeah, the compass and square symbolism of Freemasonry is also a symbol of sex and a coded hexagram. But if you look at it, you'll see that it's two legs pointing up and two legs pointing down with the G in the middle. This is the same symbol that we see on Target with the sun sign with the circle and a point within a circle, which is another sexual symbol. So So it was my intention at that point to get all into the Book of Enoch and its understanding of the visitation of the sons of God and came down and had sex with all the earthlings. But it got led astray as I, of course, had to include a study of V for Vendetta into this study of V. And as I came to understand the story behind V for Vendetta, the gunpowder plot, and of course the rhyme that we hear is remember, remember the 5th of November, the gunpowder treason and plot. I know of no reason why gunpowder treason should ever be forgot. Now that's the part that you get on the movie, but the ending of that poem is a penny loaf to feed an old pope, a farthing cheese to choke him, a pint of beer to rinse it down, a faggot of sticks to burn him. I'm talking about the Pope here. And then, of course, it gets into the Masonic symbolism. And it says, burn him in a tub of tar, burn him like a blazing star, which is back to Sirius again. Now, maybe it's just poetic rhyme. Burn his body from his head, then we'll say, old Pope is dead. And, of course, they didn't include that in the movie. So this story of the gunpowder plot is a story of a plot to blow up King James. And most researchers into conspiracy theory want to claim and say that this was the Jesuits that had conspired to make it appear that the Catholics were behind the whole thing, which didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And I wanted to dig deeper into the story. So we start at the beginning of the gunpowder plot, and we've got a list of characters. And we've got this Thomas Percy and Catesby, his co-conspirator. Now they are being, or Robert Catesby, they're being led by the nose by a Venetian intelligence agent that's working for King James the First as a counselor. He was the Earl of Salisbury. This Thomas Percy and Robert Catesby, you don't hear about them. You hear about Guy Fawkes. The V for Vendetta popularized Guy Fawkes. Well, Guy Fawkes was actually the original fall guy, and it's amazing because that's where we get the term. The word guy is from Guy Fawkes. He was the Tim McVeigh of his time. He was simply a patsy put into place and then set up by the Venetian intelligence to be caught. There was never really a plan to blow up King James. It was all merely political show. So they killed off Thomas Percy and Robert Catesby right off the bat. They were shot on the spot. But Guy Fawkes was taken into the Tower of London, and he was there given special permission by the king to torture him to get a confession out of him. And so they actually killed the two people that knew what was going on and kept the patsy for the show so that everybody could see him be displayed as this vile villain. But when we look to this Thomas Percy, we find that his family had to change their name and become the Pierces, and so they hide their connections with this heinous gunpowder plot. The Pierces went on to produce Franklin Pierce, who was our 14th president, and strangely enough, now the gunpowder plot was set to blow up King James the First, who is the King James of biblical fame. Franklin Pierce, the 14th president, got replaced by James Buchanan, who was a direct descendant of James the First. So we've got a Piercy being replaced by a King James bloodline in our own presidential structure. Now, of course, I always say that I'm not a Christian nor a patriot because I don't believe in either of those forms of control. Nobody's ever elected a president. This is all just manipulation to keep you all busy. So when we see these type of events, this is
probably a little bit of both.
As weird as the Abraham Lincoln JFK connections, you know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's great what Jordan Maxwell did as far as that goes. That is amazing.
How could that possibly happen?
Yeah, I had that up on my space, too, because it's just, it's insane is what that is. It's just like, it is, the list is crazy, people. It really is.
This is on that level, because we find that later along the lines, after Franklin Pierce, and then we've got Pauline Pierce, who she ends up getting all involved in the occultic crowd, and she never could marry the man that she loved, because he was married to someone else. But she, he was very famous and rich. He was the owner of Red Books and McCall's magazines. Pauline Pierce ended up taking a little trip to France to hang out with Aleister Crowley. Now, the interesting thing is that this is reportedly the time when Aleister Crowley did his super erotic ritual, which actually brought him into contact with the Atlantean Iwas.
Yeah, I'm aware of this story. This is a great one. This is awesome.
It's entirely probable that, of course, that Pauline Pierce and her friend Nellie had gotten into sexual intercourse with Aleister Crowley to bring about this contact with this pan-dimensional being, which we've been talking about this whole time. And all of history is riddled with pan-dimensional beings, so do not ignore them. And but Pauline Pierce comes back home, and 9 months later gives birth to a daughter named Barbara. And Barbara Pierce
is Barbara.
Comes out and marries George H.W. Bush.
Yep.
Be known as our First Lady, Barbara Bush.
Yep.
So now, she gives birth, of course, to W. And so we've got a direct descendancy of Tom Percy of the Gunpowder Plot, the blow up King James, and Aleister Crowley to come together in culmination in what we now call W.
Nice. Nice. That is just...
It just doesn't get any weirder than that.
Oh, man. It, you know, hey, if you want to sit there and blow people's minds tonight, go for it, because you just did. I mean, well...
Yeah, I got a picture of Aleister Crowley with four images of Barbara Bush. And if you don't, if you can look at that and tell me they're not kin...
they're definitely related. Well, I know one of his illegitimate grandkids, and you look at him, let alone the way he is. He was naval intelligence, and then he became a Tibetan Lama. But the guy is like totally a black magician, and he just creeps me out. His name's Dr. Richard Blackwell. He's got a couple books out, but the guy is total freak show, man. I mean, and just creepy as all creepy gets. So,
just to throw this out there, because now we're looking at this occultism, and we're looking at opening our minds to psychedelics, and when I'm looking at these critters, you know, and I know that there are many a very intelligent mind that loves Aleister Crowley. You know, Tessarian's one of them. And then we've got just a number of these elites that are into Aleister Crowley.
Well, some of his early works are absolutely phenomenal. They truly are. I mean, I've read some of his work and was just like, this guy is pure genius. He truly is. I mean, it's... I can see their points on that.
It was contact with the genie and not genius, unless we consider these both the same thing. Because all of these, even Edison practiced occultism and contact with pan-dimensional beings.
Yeah.
This is something that if we have at our hands, we can absolutely tap into it. Now, what's this whole rock and roll thing where everybody, I don't want to branch out there yet, but... You know, the contact with these other realms are amazing and bring back genius. But I've got to wonder, because, you know, when I look at W, I see pure evil. And I don't want to lump occultism into just pure evil.
There has to be a yin and yang of it.
Hall.
Yeah, there has to be a yin and yang of it, that's for sure.
There does. But I wonder why, over all this time, vampiric ones are drawn to these other darker energies in the occultic / sexual / psychedelic realm. I don't know, you know, I don't come across a whole lot of magicians that, well, I guess I can't say I haven't even been able to answer that question. My show is absolutely designed, my desire is to answer that question about good and bad magic, good occultism, bad occultism. Why is it that the people I see prominently using occultism all appear to be evil? And now I'm talking about international corporations and governments and kings. This idea of divine right to rule is a bizarre one on top of all that. Is this our life? Is this humanity? Is this human an evolution to just merely war and fight and strive for existence? Why is it that we're constantly moving forward into a civilization that's harder and harder to sustain when it should be quite the opposite? And these are the type of questions that drive me, and this is where I come up with, well, wait a minute, civilization doesn't serve a human, it serves another purpose. So what's that purpose? Well, it mines this planet for resources. And how can I answer the reasons for that? Because we're talking centuries and millennia of mining this planet for resources, and we're led back to the ancients and to absolute extraterrestrial intervention in the ancient past. And all that interlinks, because we've had the ancient gods and all their connections with the mushroom, and they're the ones that handed us the occultism, at least according to sources like the Book of Enoch. And so we should be Bushmen. Humans on this planet should be no different than the aboriginal tribes. But we are. We're way different. And we must understand and explain why all of a sudden we are man that we are, and why civilization is what it is, and why we fly in jets and aboriginals throw blow darts. We've been jumped up in the evolutionary ladder, and it does have a lot to do with psychedelics.
Well, we've been jumped up and we've been put down too. I mean, you look at the ancient symbols and stuff, and they have the jets and everything else going on them, and it's like, what? And the UFOs and in the old Christian paintings, and even in
some of the... Have you seen the hieroglyphs for the Netter, gods of the watchers of the Egyptians? The hieroglyph is a flying saucer.
Yeah. even the aboriginals have flying saucers. The Native Americans have flying saucers. I definitely believe that, on the genetic manipulation, as far as that goes, that's a given. That is such a given. I'm not a Darwinist by any means.
Manipulation as well.
Yeah. Well, very much so manipulation. I mean, to, enslave. Definitely.
For what end? That's when you come up with, what we do is produce resources.
But the thing is, also, it's so hard to enslave a human, the light being that's in us, it's too hard to suppress it, but they're trying to find ways to suppress it, and that's where we're going with all this track and trace crap.
This is why they tell us everything they're going to do. This is the trick of them, because, yes, it must be all of our own free will and accord, or else it doesn't work. And that's what all the propaganda's for, and what all of the, they tell us exactly what they're going to do, and the lone gunmen, they have the 911 episode that has the entire story laid out in it, and then the story of the stealing of the gold in Die Hard. They must tell us what they're doing, and yeah, it has everything to do with the fact that this must be of our own free will and accord.
Very much so, and they make all these films major blockbusters, so majority of the people do, go devout with it and say, okay, here it actually happens, but no, it really didn't. So, I see the only thing that most people didn't get to see was the lone pilot. So, I'm just saying most people didn't see it, and most people that we know saw it, but most people in general did not see that.
Right.
So, because we are about...
I wouldn't have seen it if it hadn't been for Alex Jones, actually.
Exactly. Well, without him mentioning it, I would have never seen it. So, but actually, I did have a friend lives here in Portland, Nate. He actually had it. He liked that show real well and was telling me about it right after 9/11 and stuff, and was like, dude, check this out. You know, this is crazy because they did this. And these are the same guys that did the X-Files and all this stuff. And I'm like, well, I never liked the X-Files. So he's, well, yeah, but check this out. And I'm like, okay, I guess so. I mean, well, my old roommate, now my brother-in-law, he loved the X-Files and still does, watches it all the time, right? I can't stand it, but he would sit there and be watching the X-Files, and this is when it was still coming out with new episodes. And I'm like, dude, this sucks. And he's like, no, it doesn't. And we got along on everything except for this. And I'm like, just to crush his mentality a little bit, I told him Mulder was gay and da-da-da-da-da. And anyway, he got all, like, you know, bent out on it. And then, I swear to God, like, the next week, he was cross-dressed. So, hey.
Oh, man.
Who can say whatever? But call it intuition, call it talking to the little elven guy with the triangle on his head, which I swear, I have not seen him, but, oh, well, maybe I go to a different place. I don't know.
Yeah, they say that you are where you are in the realm.
Yeah. Well, I look at it this way, too. I love how, you know, we both talked to Sarian, and, you know, we're going through this alignment with Pluto, you know, and this huge alignment's happening as we speak. And, what, now a month and a half ago, all the scientists in this country, anyway, they're like, Pluto's not a planet anymore.
Yeah.
What's up with that? I mean, I mean, seriously.
Pluto
all of a sudden will be a planet. It's just
gas, and that's it. It's just a big ball of gas. Trust me.
Have you seen the new Mercury insurance commercials? As they try to squash whatever it is that we're looking into and change the people's perception of it. You know, that's why I think that they would downplay Pluto, so that it wouldn't be in our consciousness or people could just write it off. They came out with a new commercial for Mercury Insurance, and it's all about the symbol of Mercury and how it's from outer space, and they've got a guy that's just like me standing in a library looking just like mine and pointing out the interconnections to where Mercury is actually a symbol from this extraterrestrial race. And I'm like, dude, they're making fun of me. You know, I must be actually touching some nerves out there. I can't believe this. On one level, it certainly could just be coincidence that they've heard of David Icke and all of this other symbolism. But nobody has covered Mercury like me. And I don't know. It looked just like me. And then at this point, or it didn't look like me, but, you know, the place was like me. And the point would be to, so that when people come to my research, they go, yeah, that's like that Mercury commercial.
Well, yeah, they do that all the time. They debunk things in advertisement and obviously throughout the media. When you look at, there's five corporations. They're not people. Well, okay, by law they're a person, but there's five corporate entities that control the world's media, the entire planet's media. So, you know,
yes.
It's like people like you and
I. Sorry, and Jews. You know, how can you explain that?
Yeah. Yeah, that's just, it is all corporate media, it's all BS, and, yeah, it's definitely why people like yourself...
It's all to make us do what, you know, and I don't believe in the outcome of, oh, they just want power, they just want us to be slaves. I mean, we've been slaves for the entire existence of humanity. There's a bigger outcome that they're after than just simply having good slaves.
I think it's where it's coming into a hive mentality is where they want it to come to, just like on the Matrix, basically. It's where we're all just this hive.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I mean, that's the way they're structuring, like, this Internet 2 that's coming out. And you don't think it's coming out? I mean, it's, you know, there's a lot of people out there because we got that Ted Stevens cat, which is a complete idiot, doesn't even know what the Internet is, and he's in control of it. He's in control of regulating it. And if you listen to the show frequently, you've heard me rant and rave and make fun of him to no end and ridicule him because he deserves every bit of it. But, you know, they're actually creating this Internet, too. Now, the Internet we know of is created by DARPA. And, you know, I mean, my God. And now the NSA controls it. And the NSA is only supposed to control foreign stuff, not inside. But they're controlling the internet now, and they're definitely going to control internet too. I mean,
that's why I put it at the end of my first video with a special thanks to the NSA for making this all possible.
Oh yeah, very much so.
They created electromagnetic tape and the internet, and without either, I could have never made my film. So
there
I gave special thanks to the NSA at the end of my film.
Well, the NSA and the FBI, I know they record my shows. The FBI, admittedly, and I'm sure the ADL does too, they don't like me for some reason. They say I'm anti-Semitic. I don't know how that is because, well, I have a lot of Jewish friends.
Bavarian Jews then, huh?
it's like, wow, dude, I don't know how I'm anti-Semitic. I don't know. If they can prove to me there's a genetic Jew, I'll shut up, I guess, about the Israelis. But I bitch about the Israelis and the Zionists. Yeah. Bitch about Jews? Never. I'd be like, I'd be like bitching at my Mormon friends for being a Mormon. It's like, hey, man, be what you want to be, I guess. But, you know, we're not going to be there in a way. But
it's
oh well.
Unfortunate that we've, you know, and now we've connected Israel with Jews. You know, we get these little mind games that are played to us, and so when we hear Israel, we think Jew. But Israel had nothing to do with the Jewish population as a whole.
Yeah.
Most of them that were sent there were pretty disappointed when they got there.
That's for true. Well, hell, brother, we're running out of time, my friend. And we definitely went on some different areas of topic, that's for sure. And I think we covered some things pretty well tonight. I had a lot of fun anyway. And
yeah, this has been a good time.
I always appreciate you coming on, man. Love to have you on again. And if you want to pimp your website or your MySpace page real quick, and we'll tell everybody goodnight afterwards.
All right, sure thing. Check out the Freeman Perspective at thefreemanperspective.blogspot.com. And I also have about 14 hours of television shows on Google Video, and which I don't have any of my documentary styles on Google Video because I keep those because I put a lot of work into them. I don't want to just put those out there. But we're at MySpace at Freeman TV. Contact me. Let's form a consciousness change. This is the only thing that's going to save this planet. We can't fight the New World Order. We can't design a better government. All we can do is be ourselves, wholly.
Well, that's extremely well said and very, very true. And more people need to follow that guideline in their life and really try to open up to oneself and be who you are and find who you are and then be that person. You'll find it so not only revealing, but beautiful in so many ways. It's going to be scary as hell at first, I promise you that. But,
not much different than the mushroom trip.
Yeah. Definitely, two different experiences, but all
through the threshold, but once you're in the realm, it's fantastic.
It truly, truly is. It's shocking and devastating at first, but, it does get, life is such a beautiful thing. Truly enjoy it for what it's worth. You know, we get to be physical selves for a while instead of light selves, and then we'll go on to be light selves again, and possibly physical again, I don't know. But I do know we will be light again. So, no matter what happens in this crazy world.
We come back and back again, if not only as just the DNA spiral.
There you go. I mean, it's always something interesting, that's for sure, and that's even got to be entertaining in its own aspect. So, again, Freeman, I always appreciate you coming on, brother. It's always good to have you. Look forward to the next time. I'm sure we'll have something even more interesting to talk about, as you always do have something crazy coming up. I absolutely applaud you on your V research. That's the bomb, brother. I'm glad you did that. So definitely hit Freeman up at his websites. Grab his video if you can. You will enjoy it. It's 3 hours of total yumminess. Covers six different subjects that all will intertwine and lead together, and it is the Freeman Perspective. And you've been listening to From the Bunker here on RevereRadioNetwork.com. Have a great weekend. Be good to one another. Be good to yourselves. Peace.
It seems natural and obviously to say that we live in the physical world. Here's all of us. We're walking around in this physical world here, right?
But you see, that is a conventional point of view. That is a convention of our existence. To think in those terms. To presume in those terms. We say things like, there is this external world, and I am me, and you are you, there's the universe. See, we say things like this. All we need to do is to really consider, really observe our condition fundamentally.
Just to keep Yeah.